Welcome to the Open Book Podcast. What you're about to hear is a recording of a live event that took place at the September 2025 edition of the Open Book Festival. In this event, called Spirituality in the Now, Sipukazi Jonas and Busumzi Inkande speak to Voyo Kuyana about reclaiming a spiritual inheritance and returning to the heart of Isintu.
Bye. بیتول هات نمیزیم گابل زام کاریلا دام فمان زیت ما گوش تو هوس جونس اوتی انا چیپا از نیم بیست ساعت هست به میلان بچه هم دارم سیزام پیلانه زد تو کوبای لابینیانی سوپی فرکون آب وام که نبندن بیتول باشه زابا بوی ساگی دانه
Apparently, it is good and it's time for us to begin. So with that, I'd like to welcome all of you and to thank you all for coming and to recognize your missing of the church clock this morning and rather coming here to hear why church in the first place. So my name is Vuyo Goyana, Mamgwevu, Machangisa, Odia, Undungana, Opijula. There's a Zongi's cow cow that I'm born of. Yes, Tamakusha. And I'd like to welcome with particular distinction our two guests, U Sipogazi Jonas, Makwangeshe, Maleta, Gebelenze. Nesa Glomam, O Ambanazo. Tamakusha. Spin the Samkele when I Vusumzi Nande Matiba Zondras and Jabas and Azumentanto Pomoy Ua Launda Nezaglomama Oambanazo. We give particular thanks to all the ancestries that have allowed us to be here today and to those who have given you the gifts that you're sharing with us today. Nibalile Sebulela Setamakush Nias Kulisa Nias Fundis. The conversation today is about our spiritual inheritance as an African people. Uspogaz Jonas has written a book called Weeping Becomes a River. It is a beautiful interplay between poetry and myth, which she'll share a little bit more about. And Uvusi has written A Journey Kwantu, and he'll tell us who Ntu is, and he'll tell us why the book. Both masterful pieces, I must say. Amazing reads. They stir us and they lift us up, and hence the conversation. And thanks for being here. Yeah, we're in your honored presence today. It goes. So, okokuqala mhlambe masinivini niphefumla when say khona la. Yeah. Thank you. Your use of metaphor, Spogaz, in this book is just breathtaking. I think it'll have our heads spinning for generations to come. And maybe just for you to say what inspired the interplay between the two forms and what the particular metaphor of the title actually means for you, right? Because I'm sure you put it out there for us to have our own interpretations, but what is this weeping and how does it become a river? Yeah, just very briefly.
Can I? Thank you so much. Molen Betuna. Thank you so much for honoring us with your presence. I actually want to thank you so much to Bantu because as you're singing now, and we've had this conversation about Lintsomi, and again, and I want to read something first,
yes.
A witch by any other name, which for me, this idea of, you know, dismemberment, disembodiment, the pieces of being lost is sort of held. And this poem then also, you know, both the poetic and the mythic
excellent.
Appear together in this particular poem.
Take us there.
A witch by any other name. It would be wrong if fat white people overseas get slim, thanks to us, while our children go hungry and uneducated. Magdalena Gassi. Uwalumkele amagqwirha. Throw hair trimmings into the street and they will bewitch you. Sisi doesn't say this loudly enough for mother to chastise her. Singamagqoboka. Fear sprouts, imagining a witch woman with face like zinc extracting my name from my follicles over a three-legged pot. British witches, officials, beheaded Uhin Zagakawuta, stole his ears and teeth as souvenirs. Traditional healers agree. Umbuso onikela ngamalungu emizimba eyezeni unqula ebingelelweni wobugqirha. In the Kalahari, a sand gaicha points out plants conserved by scientists. He can no longer gather and use them as his ancestors taught without going to jail. Walumkele amagqirha. Bring ancient knowledge to light and they will bewitch you. The Council for Scientific and Industrial Research and two foreign pharmaceuticals are Macbeth's three hags in lab coats and suits, attempting to divine weight loss properties out of Hudia and patent it for commercial gain. Science. Jagalashe, jagalashe, dopule diacha. Sisi saying, refuse further dismemberment. And so this poem is actually, because I was going to read a different one, and then while hearing the song, I thought this is actually, you know, there's this convergence between these two. And for me, I love that you're saying that I want people to interpret the title, because, you know, there's so many things that happen within, around bodies of water and so on. But on a personal front, it was, the writing of this book was a kind of unblocking of places that had been stuck. I mean, it's not a fool, but it felt as if there was a flow in allowing myself to speak about things that I knew would create a sense of discomfort within my core family, within my formative space, within, you know, like church people being like, So it felt like multiple layers of a kind of release. And so that river of, because the tears are also coming from different places.
Right.
And it was also just so much fun to call colonization what it is, which is witchcraft.
Yeah.
And so this the flow is, it's a personal one. It's a very internal, but it's also thinking about systematic ways and what I was doing with language as a way of freeing my own tongue to exist awesome. In all of its nuance. Mm.
Yeah. Mm. And myth and poetry.
Myth and poetry. I mean, Inzomi, again, thank you for this. Inzomi, Skulengazo, with our mothers and grandmothers telling
grew
us.
Up to them, yeah.
By the way, I like to say this with people. If you don't know the things, if some things are translated, some are not, we're going to speak. If you seek understanding, you must go and find it. So I would say, if you don't understand, go make a Guni-speaking friend. You know, there's work that if you are not familiar with the cultural, the mentions of certain things here, if you don't come from this particular context, just as we did when we were in varsity and, you know, you're reading, Merchant of Venice, and you're like, I never left the country. Like,
where's
what?
Venice?
You know, so I think it's also an invitation to do the work to find and make meaning and not sit back and think, okay, because I enjoy the privilege of English in this country, I can just chill. Mm. Everyone must come and make themselves understood to me. Mm. So there was, there's that. But the mythic and the poetic, it was a way of honoring Inzomi. I love storytelling.
Yeah.
And I wanted to really think about oral storytelling on the page in English. So it also feels like a little bit of a desecration.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a way of honoring that form,
yeah,
and allowing it to exist because of how much is lost through
sure,
through what is oral, and for it not to be lost, but also to write something new, to write my own Inzomi, because of my own sort of journey as someone who experienced the legacy of colonization through Model C education and all of the other things, and actually studying English, so they have a very specific relationship with that. So yes, I think I felt there were things I could work out in the world of Inzomi that I couldn't or didn't really want to in the material world of poetry.
Right.
And it's I've loved it.
Awesome.
I've loved it.
Awesome. It comes through beautifully. And I guess what you're also saying is, you know, this experience that we have of the bleeding of the Inzomi into the poetry is to say that there is no distinction really between the mythic and the real. Yeah? It's all just one huge lived experience. Because we know these characters in the Ndzomis very well. Yeah? These ogres are still here. They're colonizing folk. They're doing things. They are dismembering folk. They're here. They're here. Thank you. And Vusi, your well-researched masterpiece, Ujeni Kwantu, were you seeking to falsify anything in setting about doing this research? Was there something you were seeking to prove or disprove? What was the impulse you were responding to in writing it?
To start off with, I want to start at a very basic level. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Mm. And thank you to you, and thank you to the choir. I think we need to understand the importance of what happened before we started. Important ceremonies in African culture start with a song. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, song is prayer. So you basically partook in a prayer. And a prayer is basically a doorway into the sacred. So we sort of entered a space in which we are discussing. We are no longer discussing books. We're discussing something that is very sacred. And for me, my process starts with my name. I grew up being called Uvusi. Until I learned that that's not just my given name, that's also my spirit name. And my spirit name is Uvusumzi. It's a name that was given to me with more intent than I realized when I accepted being called Uvusi. And now that I have learned the importance of it, I've learned the importance of my full name and my surname. So that's where I want to start. So in the book that I wrote, a lot of the time when you sort of want to write or when you're thinking about books about spirituality, a lot of the time it's an expert giving advice on this is how you do this, this is how you do this, this is how you do that. I embarked on this book not knowing what is it that I'm going to write about. I do not set out to say, this is what this is, this is what this is, this is what this is. I said, what happened? Why, if I'm going to say, let's say we talk about ancestors, for example, we would have moments where we're going to say, ancestors are this and this and this, this is how you talk to them. And my question would be, why? How did we get to the point where we say these are the ancestors and this is how we engage with them? Why this particular way? Why is an ancestor?
Yeah.
What is an ancestor? Mm-hmm. So it wasn't, I did not start off with the intent of proving a particular point of view. I had no point of view.
Mm.
I didn't say I'm a person who practices African spirituality, so I'm going to write a book to prove why you should do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because in the book, you'll find things that are like, you actually shouldn't do this.
Mm.
This does not, I'll tell you the things that don't make sense to me.
Mm.
And why, how did I get to this particular thing? And a lot of the time when we're dealing with learning about spirituality, there's like a set route to say you're going to learn this, and then you're going to learn this, you're going to learn this.
Mm.
And in the age that we live in with podcasting and all of those things, there's a lot of, this is what this is. This is what this is. And that's just that. I wanted to tell you my thought process. If I say this is what this thing is, I want to trace you from the very beginning of how did I begin to understand this thing. If we want to say, for example, that, you know, in most of our cultures, they're very, even ancestrally, they're very patriarchal. You know, they will say, you know, kona esbayeni, you know, the man's lineage, the children belong to the. Why is that? Where did that actually come? Not to say whether it's wrong or right,
yeah, yeah.
But I actually want to understand why is it
where
that
it comes from.
The children belong to the father's family? What does it mean, you know, the surname thing? What does it mean? Not to justify it, because in the process you find that as much as we're doing it, it still doesn't make sense. And in some instances, we do it, but it's actually, if you trace it, you actually realize that it's actually blatantly wrong.
Right.
Based on, not on personal opinion, but this is how this thing started, and this is where it is now.
Yeah.
And you can see how, from the point where it started to where the corruption of it actually happened.
Right.
And you then, I will leave it to you to say, you can still do it, but you also need to know that we're entering... Not to say we're entering spirituality with a mentally, but you also have to think about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. So basically, I could be an ancestor sitting here. This is what you were trying to prove. Why are we calling those folk ancestors?
Yes.
Right. And in the book, you do talk about this dialectical relationship between culture and spirituality as is lived in Africa. Where the one gives meaning to the other as it develops and as it grows, right? And that leaves me wondering about where we are now as Africans, right? Because our cultures are not that clearly defined. They've been influenced by the global realities. They've been influenced by colonization and all kinds of histories that we've endured. And so what could it possibly mean then for where we are? Does a book tackle that in some way for you? Is it a response to it? Or how does the book deal with that?
The one thing that sort of sparked my interest in this particular direction is when you're dealing with spirituality and ancestors, they'll tell you, like, you know, don't anger the ancestors. If you do this, the ancestors are going to be angry. So in this particular framework, I wanted to look at that paradigm as to why is it that if I do this or don't do that, I anger the ancestors. Why is it that the things that I do in the physical offend people who are not here anymore? You know, if I drink this water with my left hand instead of my right hand, why do they get offended? You know,
they're very offendable people.
They're the most sensitive bunch ever. You know? So for me, I wanted then to interrogate that what is the connection between me doing or performing a cultural taboo and what it does in the spirit realm. You know, for example, if a child plays with fire, there's a connection in which the parent gets offended, right? So I wanted to know is that what is it about the things that we do here? What does my action, if I drink this glass of water with my left hand instead of my right hand, what does it translate into in the other side that causes the offense to say you shouldn't have done that? Mm. Why is it that, because it means that it affects something on that side. Mm. And I want to know what is it that it does, you know, on that side. And to talk a bit further about the relationship between our culture and the evolution of culture is that there are things that happen in the physical world that we can't function without, right? For example, to bring a child into this world, there needs to be a certain process. A man and a woman get together, and a woman becomes pregnant, and a child comes into the world. That's a natural thing. A human being comes into the world. Even spiritually, a spirit comes into the world. Mm. That's a basic fact, if we can put it that way. And then there's the politics around it. How is this happening? How is the child born? Where is the child born? And we tend to think that culture is void of politics. Mm. And for me, culture is primarily politics, mm-hmm. because all of those things can be affected by something else. You know, you know where the woman gives birth and the certain practices that are done there. When you go to Bapedi, there's a particular process where childbirth happens. When you go to Botswana, it's politics, right? But there's a way in which these politics are interlinked with the spirit realm. And I wanted to understand what that linkage is. Mm. At a certain stage in a young person's life, there's a need, you know, there's a hormonal change, there's this whereby there is a need to transition from childhood into something else. Mm. It's a thing that is inherent in us biologically and spiritually, because you can see with, you know, the sense of a lost youth that we have in that there is no guidance from that.
Yeah.
How you conduct that, or how you position that, how you carry that transition, is all politics. Mm. Ushaga took that process and turned them into soldiers. Mm. Some people will take that same procedure and turn those boys into something else, or those girls turn them into something else. Mm. It's all politics. So for me, what it means to the reason that I feel encouraged by the fact that this has politics in it is that it shows that it's malleable. Mm. There is no single culture that is set in stone for centuries upon centuries.
Right.
So I feel like we are at a point where we can now create something.
Sure. Sure. And if culture is that fluid, then so is spirit. That's what I'm hearing.
Precise.
Yeah.
If I can just jump in here quickly, what you're saying also elevates the beginning of Intsomi.
Yeah.
In weeping, because all of those things that, you know, how I sort of think about, I guess I'll use quotation marks and say almost the corruption or the disconnect because of, I'm a colonization. so that disconnect that happens for the child who's born under strange circumstances and the women that actually have to, can I read it? Mm. They have to adjust tradition in order to hide,
please read it.
Inverted commas, in order to create a sense of coherence and peace within the community, because the things that are supposed to happen cannot happen because she doesn't have the key component that makes that possible. So now they have to actually adjust and adapt in order to create something that is akin to what is expected.
Sure.
And then obviously things unravel.
They have to improvise,
Mm. So there's a kind of thing of, again, if... I prefer to read it, but can we
park the reading for later?
Yes, absolutely.
So maybe
absolutely.
Right toward there. I mean, you could read all these poems, really. So if I could ask you, Spogaz, actually, because I also am sitting with this suspended feeling around Imbeleko Ka'oli now, you know, the character in the Ntsomi. Because if these things are so important, and there she is, sitting about her life without Imbeleko, what does that say for her, culturally and spiritually, right? And you're explaining the cultural aspect, and then what does it mean at a spiritual level for her to set about the world in Jalo? And perhaps this is why this thing happens to her. So we'll hear more about that when you read the piece. Are we entering a phase, mhlambi, where because our cultures are so dislocated and so far removed from their own centers, we are also needing to probably move spirit along and say, spirit, come here now. This is the new culture, yeah? Because both of you referenced that in the last pieces of your books. It's literally your last line, Wenavusi, where you say, are we a new people? Are we really that different from those who brought us here? And you, Mending Patterns, that last piece that you write, you're offering us new ways of living spirit, which for me tend to lean towards the more artistic, right? And I'm just wondering what it really means and what you would say to someone who says, I'm agnostic, I'm a spiritualist, I'm as Buddhist as I am African spiritualist, as I am Christian, Muslim, I'm all of it, I'm just a vessel for spirit, right? So just wondering about your thoughts on that, yeah.
It's difficult. Sipingoku.
Where are we now?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know because I think there's always, first of all, even this conversation, we're making certain assumptions when we speak about culture. I know that not everyone sitting here is thinking about culture in the same way. We're not thinking about spirit in the same way. We're not thinking about Africanness in the same way. So already we're not moving from the same starting block. Which makes it, again, difficult to answer a question like Sipingoku because there is always this constant tension between a kind of desire for embo, right? The desire for where we come from, desire for the past. There's and I think the more unwieldy our evolution is as people, as a race, like human, the more there's a desire to kind of be sure and to be dogmatic and to put things in boxes and to give things labels and to really, I mean, if you look at fascism that's just absolutely rampant, it's a response to, you know, to progressive kind of the progression of humanity, really. So when I say I really meant it when I say I don't know because I think there are pockets. There are pockets of movement. We're seeing it a lot when I speak to think about creativity. A lot of the music a lot of the art that's being produced is showing a yearning. I'm going to speak particularly for young Black creatives in South Africa, who have there's this yearning, right, for finding self within history, to locate ourselves within where we come from, because of that feeling of disconnect that came in various ways. I think there is a reluctance, you know, if I'm thinking about our parents who would have been converted in some way, so there's the demonization of where we come from in order to take on, you know, a conversion. That there's a major discomfort there about the yearning of this particular generation. There may be another generation I'm thinking about.
The generation of bikers. Welcome, James.
So you know, it's like, you know, even if we think about the economy, right, there's different economies, there's different South Africas, there's different economies. So even when we try and speak about the economy, it's like, what's informal, what's formal, who's, you know, there's what's seen, what's not seen. So I think there are actually, there's a convergence in many ways of there are people who are going in a very specific route. There are those who are pulling back, who are uncomfortable with that and trying to be as sure as possible and to nail things down and to, again, make more rules to say, you know, there are more taboos because it's like when we don't know, when we're uncertain, that desire to pull back. So I don't know if there's a coherent direction that we're taking where we can say we are a new people. We'd have to narrow the parameters of who we is in order to be able to answer that question.
I love it.
Well, I think.
I love it. Yeah. I love the answer of I don't know. Yeah. It's a very healthy place to be.
It's liberating.
It's a very healthy.
It's very liberating.
Yeah. It's a very healthy starting point. And maybe it is exactly the entry point for spirit, right? If we really want to be a spiritual people, that we stop knowing what we know and we just allow for spirit to lead. And you make a very important point about how disparate our cultures are as an African people in the first place, right? And how difficult it then becomes to claim that we can arrive at some universals when the essentials themselves are so divergent, right? So we are at a place where we don't know, but we are here. We are here. Thank you. Thank you for offering that. And just a final thought from both of you about what you might offer your children, your nieces, your nephews, as a thing to know, I can't even say to hold on to, given the flow that you've just described, about African spirituality, right? So what would that be from your perspective? Okanye, even as a silent wish, sometimes our parents don't say the things that they'd like to see us become or do, but they're constantly praying for them inside, and they want them to manifest. So what is it that we wish to manifest for our closest kin that is yet to come and kind of continue this journey for us, even with this not knowing that we're sitting with?
So it's actually being part of this conversation is weird for me a little bit. When I got the invitation, I was like, I don't know, because I anticipated or I expected or assumed that to speak about African spirituality, you know, denote some kind of expertise. As you said, yeah, a lot of books, you're told this is what you must do, this is what you must know. And I'm like, listen, the research for this was in a book.
The book don't tell you.
Like, I'm not talking, I wasn't sitting there like, oh, I know Kang Chang. I was like, I need to go and Google, and I need to look in a book, and I need to talk to people, and I need to do. So even the what I describe in the book is not, I didn't grow up with knowing those things, so I had to go find it.
Yeah.
So even there, you know, feeling like an imposter within the conversation itself, and then feeling awkward because I'm in my own wrestling and tension, and it's like, we're having conversations here that I can't have with my parents. Mm. Because I'd be like, Denam, Zanga Sikfunzes. You know? And you're like, it's like, while you're praying, while you're there, here's a list. But for me, I felt like I wanted to be part of our conversation because it is allowing public uncertainty.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
And I think that is what I would wish. An expansive sense, a fluid sense of inquiry, of that sort of open-hearted curiosity,
sure.
And being comfortable with landing in different places, I'd envision a world where you don't have to be beholden to that. Mm-hmm. That if today I'm here. And tomorrow you meet me and I'm somewhere else, that's okay. And it's not like, one way express to hell. VIP. You know, so. So, which is actually something I even wish for our parents.
Yeah.
Because we then, you know, I don't think we can wish that for the future without wishing it for our parents.
Yeah.
Because whatever disconnect, that dismemberment.
Yeah.
That disembodiment exists. It's multi-generational,
absolutely.
And so we need to address it from both ends. If we're sitting in the middle of, you know, whatever generations we might be, so if I'm thinking about my nephew and I'm thinking about my parents, I wish the same thing for them, which is that freedom of uncertainty.
And the added benefit to wishing it for our parents, of course, is that they then become better ancestors because they would have processed
less
a lot
offended.
Of this. Yeah, less offendable. Clever, when I spoke. My lung is Abba for Abba. Beautiful. And I suspect the invitation, and I could be wrong, I suspect the invitation is an acknowledgement of your generosity in writing something that begins to spark something in our own spirits to say, could this be the beginnings of a spiritual conversation that we are needing to have? So, really just wanting to ground you in the uncertainty. Yeah. Which is more comfortable for you, by the way?
Let me tell you why.
Yeah.
why that is, right? Mm-hmm. I'll sort of compress the story. I don't know if I'm jumping ahead because I wanted you to read the part in the book, but I hope I can tell the premise, right? So there's the story of a child who's born without an umbilical cord in the story, right? So I want to tell you how I connected with that, right? So, this part is important. This part is important, right? My assumption, my belief is that amaXhosa come from the Eastern Cape, right? So
the ones we see, yes.
At some point in the late 1800s, I have a great-great-grandfather of mine who left Eastern Cape and went to the Northern Cape, right? And he had children there. One of them was my grandfather. My grandfather left the Northern Cape and went to Gauteng, Joburg. He went there alone, right? So you have to understand that if you travel from wherever you come and you come here alone, you are alone, right? So he arrives, meets a woman, has children, right? And then he has the children, and then he leaves. One of those children is my father, right? So my father barely knows his father. My grandfather came here alone. So in that time, my father's siblings all pass away while they were still children, right? So my father has no siblings. I have no uncles. I have no aunts. What am I? They say, my father can't speak a word of it. What am I? My father spoke Setswana and Afrikaans. What am I? Right? We want to talk about culture. And it's very easy to talk about purity in culture. And then I have to ask, what am I? Yeah. Yeah. Am I Xhosa? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I know nothing about it. I learned this language when I arrived here in Cape Town to study when I was 19, 20. It was the first time I was in an environment. Not a single person in my family understands Xhosa. What am I?
Yeah.
So in the story about a child being born without an umbilical cord, I don't have one. Right? Now, I have kids. I have to give them an identity. I say to my children, what are you? So now I'm at a point where I have to gather, I have to put together something. I have a son who's coming of age. He needs to be able to hit his chest with something that comes from me. But my chest is empty. Right? So the idea of a child being born without an umbilical cord connected with me. I was like, those are the words I've been trying to say, like, I don't have one. And the process of, in the story where they try to feign the mark of an umbilical cord. You know? And I felt there was this unfairness in this idea that I've always felt like if this is the wrong way to be, to exist in this world, then it shouldn't be allowed to happen. You know what I mean? Like, I've always felt like if we weren't supposed to kill, we shouldn't be able to have the capacity to do that. So now I am born in a society that values culture above, you know, strict culture above everything else, but it also creates the capacity not to have it. And you are saying, what must I do with that? So in the book for me is the process of me gathering those pieces and saying, if I remember when I found my spiritual mother, I was and deep in my 30s. And she was saying, okay, you know, so to say, you know, you have to, I wanted to ask her, like, how do I, you know, put together my family? And then she's like, well, you have to ask your uncles and your aunts and whatever. I'm like, I don't have. And then she literally said to me, if you don't have one, if you don't have anyone to ask, now you create it. From this point onwards, your lineage does what you do. You now decide,
you
as
are
in
the
ancestor. In this branch,
yeah,
we do this, we do this, we don't do that, we don't do that. So now for me, culture is not a thing I talk about. It's a thing I must be to everyone. You see, so when you go back to Uvusumzi, do you get it now? Do you get it? Right? So when I learned what that, and I was like, when did these people know that I was going to be in this position when they gave me this name? You know, for those who don't know, Uvusumzi is to
rebuild.
It's to rebuild.
To reestablish. To reconstruct.
A people.
To resurrect.
You see, so that's when I said, my name is actually my spirit name. Right? This is, for all intents of and purpose, that's my Josine, because it's an instruction. What the people, I felt like when I discovered this, when I had this realization, it was like the people who... Yo, I'm getting emotional.
Do you know who gave you the name, Vosums?
I don't know, but when I found this out, I had this moment where I was like, so the people who made this name happen knew that Umdana Wet was going to be lost.
Your tears
right?
are welcome. But
so,
Masililel.
I need you to know why you are here.
Yeah.
We won't be there with you. We won't be around. We know that. For whichever way they knew, we won't be there. You're going to be alone. But we need you to know why you're alone and what you are there for. And for me, it's like, this is what I am here for. When you ask the question of, you know, what is inheritance? My inheritance that I can leave my children is this work of me understanding me. The thing that I can give to my son is a better understanding of myself. My book is named after my son. Because I said, I don't want you to be where I am. From this point, we go forward. Right? So now in this question of culture, when I say that culture for me is not a thing that I talk about, it's a thing that I must be. You know, when I say to my son, Tina Onglande, we do this, we do that. We don't do this. It's because no uncles. There's no uncle who's going to tell you, no, Tina. No, I am saying. And because of that, I have to embody that. To say, this is culture. And we talk about the link between culture and spirituality. I have to now be cognizant of the fact that I am setting a spiritual precedent. To say that, this is how you're going to offend me. When I'm no longer around. This is how you're going to piss me off.
Learn it.
Because
take notes.
I said to you, we don't do this, we don't do this, we don't do this. We don't abandon our kids. Yeah. There are no deadbeats in this family. I will beat you down. You will feel like you're cursed. And I'm promising you that. We don't do that. You are a father first before anything else when you have children. That is the lineage that we're starting.
Yeah.
And that means that now I have to sort of pay even more particular attention to how I carry myself in the world.
Yeah, Father.
For those of you who have seen me online and wonder why I always dress the same way all the time, it's because I'm trying to streamline things so things are not confused.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've taken too much time. Sorry about that. Hey.
Thank you. Ningos. Ningos. What's the awful sums? We understand the book more for what you've just shared. You mentioned at the beginning of the book that it was you just looking for your father. I can see how you were looking for him, both in the on the material plane and the spiritual plane in a way, right? And what a father. Because the gift we have now is this book, right? And fathers provide. The healthy father archetype is the one of provision. And your dad has provided for wonke lo mzi uzawufunda incwadi yakho. Uyasondla. Uyasondla. I guess it was never going to be the same for all of us. Siyabulela but inkosi. Thanks for living so we could. Mm. As we just, how are you feeling, Spokers? Anything you'd like to say? Before we open up to the audience, any questions or comments they might wish to put to you guys?
They are, but I want to sit in this. This,
yeah. This is sacred. This is sacred. This is where we are. You've just answered the question of where we are. Silap. Silapango. And maybe just by way of bridging between this conversation and this conversation, just to check your resonance with this idea that African spirituality, I don't even know what it is, as you say, because spirit is with all of us, and it's probably quite an individuated experience. But in some ways, we live it in the collective, and we want to put it together. And if I look at your book, it probably takes us over the last 400, 500 years in terms of your research area?
No, no.
Is it further back?
5,000 years.
5,000 years, right. So just wondering whether this idea has resonance for you, right? Because it's something I play with a lot. The idea that we had ways of living spirit on this continent from way, way, way back, right? Since the beginnings of the first people who arrived here, who apparently came onto this continent. And the journey has gone through many iterations, some of them polytheistic, some of them monotheistic, and there have been other influences. And is there a possibility that because we live as epigenetic beings and we interpret spirit from the place of how we take in our environments and our cultural experiences, we are now left with archetypes that have been passed down genetically even, right? And these archetypes sometimes live in Intom, yeah? So if you think of the cosmologies of Bo Kemet, ancient Egypt, Bo the Yoruba religions and forms of spirituality which have come into the east of Africa, further into the west, and down into the south, yeah, and have been interpreted in different ways. Is there a possibility that we have some of that distillation in our clan names, right? Because our clans had a lot to do with what you've just described around how we name. So because there's a particular thing that you bring into existence which comes from your genetic ways of being in the world, yeah? And all of these are things that have gone through this whole spiritual journey over the eons, if you like. And so, xa usithi umntu uzondwa zintshaba zingazubenza nto, you're invoking a particular archetype, yeah? Even with the spurious ways in which clans have now been demarcated over time, which you describe in the book, there's still a reason why I would say, Dingushaga, I'm going to take these boys and use them here because I know Koni archetype that's alive in them, yes, that I want to use in the war. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So as we look at that, and we look also at these creatures that we know that live in the Ndomis, what is the resonance that you're feeling with this little journey that I've just taken you on? Yeah? Even after having written these amazing books, what is your sense of what meaning is to be made of this? Just in a word. So the audience can also have a moment to engage with your wonderful books.
I actually wanted to honor you with Melting Point, but you've got the book. I wanted to read you Melting Point, but because I also believe family, I've always thought family culture is greater than social culture.
You want to
culture.
Honor him? Please
yes,
do.
Yes, yes. And just to answer your question, I think this is why we create. Because I always wondered, why do our clan names stop? Like, where's the stopping point of, okay, after that you're like, okay, 10 people in your history, it's enough now, all right? No more. This is it. Yeah. And so it's like, for me, every time we write, we are, and I think why it was important for me to write in Ntsomi, to use those archetypes, to use the tropes that exist within that world, but to write something new,
yeah.
Because there are things that are lost,
yeah.
that are lost forever.
Yeah.
And so I think with the actions, that's how we are creating like new ancestries, yeah, through what we do.
Yeah.
And so I think even there are ways in which we speak about. So if I speak about my grandfather, my grandmother, I really want to evoke the maternal. But I'm loving that we're really actually speaking about the black paternal in such beautiful ways. It's to say what the way I'll be remembered, whether it's through these books, whether it's through whatever, hopefully the impact that I've had on my family and people close to me, that is kind of the new...
So,
That is what we're doing, right? So as much as maybe in within the clan names they've stopped, but the way that people will speak of us and what we've done here, I think is that continuation.
Right.
So I was just thinking about Melting Point, which also maybe holds the heart of Weeping Becomes a River, this idea of... Yeah. When you are tired of paddling between search engines and everything you have forgotten, to transform the taps outside your childhood home as open and silent as Edvard Munch's scream into a meaningful image for your poetry, text your father. He'll return your text with a call, and you'll laugh because his voice is the rolling of sleeves. First question, a spanner loosening your conversation with, why this past? Why winter questions in summer? I am writing, Dad, you will tell him, manipulating memory into metaphor. And the internet suggestions lack poetry. Note how he plumbs frozen pipes from the past into present tense. How he does not say, I used to thaw the pipes. Instead, dissolve slowly with lukewarm water, or wait for the sun to bend the will of ice, coaching you through instructions as if distended plastic veins are in front of you now. And he has packed batkos to sustain you through any seasons which obstruct the flow in you, both laughing at the reminder, skating with your school shoes on a frosted lawn, then softening frozen toad regret in front of a paraffin heater. Your mind will covet other recollections from before he was your father. But his memories have solidified in him, and you're still learning which questions defrost them as winter sun and which are scalding water, unwilling to crack the copper of his silences. And I was just thinking in terms of I think soft and open fathers are a gift to their children.
Absolutely. Or are you ready for questions from the audience?
There's two questions.
Ngozi, and thank you for being such an incredible audience so far. Let's see what you come up with. Happy birthday, Mike. I see you. So.
Good, no questions.
Any questions at all? Any comments, anything you'd like to say, Mandawichi? Naba, ni babonele ngabethu. Ngabethu.
Molweni. Igama nguSiphokazi. I don't have a question. I just want to say thank you so much for everything that you've shared. I'll share a little bit of how it resonated with me. So, like a month or so ago, I recently underwent a process with my family, umcimbi ekhaya, and at the age of my eldest brother is 30 soon, and indaba yenkaba has been an issue with us. There's three of us, and we recently finally had that done. And the way abantu abadala or ancestors come through, they show you that this is a gap in your lineage, or this is something that needs to have your attention for you to look at. And when that comes to you, you feel like, oh, okay, this is a problem. We need to fix it. There needs to be a solution. And my path has been a bit complicated for myself because I've had the same ideas of feeling like an imposter. There are so many people in my family that do have inkaba, that do have that connection. Why me? You know, I feel like I don't have the tools. I have been far removed from my culture, so to say. And yet it kept feeling like, yeah, but you're the one. So we will show you, we will guide you. Take your time, and as you know, the flesh, you want to act and fix something now. So it's been a process, it's been a journey, and a journey for more than just us as the children, our parents as well. We kept having those phone calls during my undergrad, doing my concepts for my artworks. My work kept pulling me back to my ancestors, without even me knowing or having a name for what it was pulling me back to. I know that now, but at the time, there was always something pulling me in that direction. So having those phone calls, asking, oh, mama, tell me about our great-grandfather. And she'd be like, why? Why now? Why do you want to know these things? What do you, you know? Yeah, yeah. And also not knowing why I'm asking about that. But
awesome. Yeah.
Something just keeps making me want to pry and ask questions. And then your parents start to realize, okay, all of these things that we thought we could not attend to and keep living our lives, giving our kids the bare minimum, but the necessities that they need to live should be enough. Mm-hmm. And yet there's that thing in the background that's always there. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a beautiful experience being here, listening to the fact that, you know, this is sort of maybe a universal thing that is happening. So, ndiyabulela kakhulu.
Thank you for that.
Ngozi. Ngumabani lo bethetha?
Mam Gebe.
Ngozi. Mthembukazi.
Molweni.
Landi.
My name is Lerato. I'm a big fan of both authors. I've been following Vusi since I was 17.
Stalker.
From that show on SABC One.
Awesome.
But that's not the point. First of all, thank you for being vessels and letting this work come through you, because I can imagine how difficult it is to tap into that other realm and how heavy it can be to bring it forth. So firstly, thank you for that.
Awesome.
How I resonate with the story of inkaba and not knowing where you're from is that my family was stripped of their traditions and land during the missionary days. So we don't have any customs. We don't khela, we don't do anything except for Christianity. And as I got older, I became more interested in what did we do before we were stripped. And it's been so hard to find the answer because I know ang soni sangom, right? And so I feel like nowadays...
You don't have Wi-Fi.
I don't aviate. And it's been so difficult to explain this yearning for custom and culture when I come from parents who believe Jesus is the only way. And they are unwilling to... They've been so indoctrinated by salvation that they cannot bring themselves to see, or maybe it's too painful to find out what was actually happening. So this book has helped me find somewhat of a resolution to be brave in searching. Even if I don't find the answers, it's given me the bravery to say to my parents, maybe I see how Jesus works for you. I'm not saying he doesn't work or she doesn't work, but for me, it's not enough.
Yeah.
And your book has made me feel brave to say that to them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Marvelous. Thank you, both of you. And I guess we have time for two more or so questions. Kubanistiko skalirat mabai.
Mamtian.
Uzondo skangan. Thank you. Thank you.
Malwen. I'm a big fan. So umbuzo wam and then Zoibega Jan. So today is close to Halloween. So umbuzo wam. So umbuzo wam dingum to attend umkolo. Do tanda kakhulu unjabulela Halloween. And andise emkolweni kukho umoya uyafike kum and I understand. And now it has gotten to the point where can't go because didn't feel uncomfortable because and yes, because we love jazz together and I attend a lot of jazz events and tibuza kunumbuzo and nomdola papakati klambo yazi yoba kwenze kantoni, do I need to go sing, do I need to go to the stage, is there something because I'm doing my poopa. Like a condo in the guy, but when it comes to music, when it comes to music and dads, and yeah.
Ngo sindi so buti umabano na.
Tungu matebe sa zalong mami.
So Cindy's first question is to anybody who might have an answer. I have this thing where spirit just stirs in me very deeply when I listen to music or when I sing. Yeah. And I'm not sure what that's about, because it's not like I'm one of those who dream a lot or anything. So what's that all about? Yeah, that's the question to everybody from her. Is this a question?
Okay. No, it's not a question. It maybe might be a comment. Oh, I didn't expect to be visible today. Here I am. Igamalami ngunomali wakangumalo. Ngiwuzwitekalanga umkhatshwa usothondosi. Wow, I feel very nervous, and I don't usually feel nervous speaking, but I feel like for the first time I'm about to publicly own myself.
Take your time, sis.
Ndingu koko lwandle. Ndatswasa enkomo lwandle. It's the first time I've said this publicly. Wow.
Take your time.
The one vision I had as you were speaking, and if it resonates with you, obviously take it. If it doesn't, leave it. My journey is very young, but what I have come to understand in the sense that when I say my journey, I'm not again like ugogom dala. Idlozi lami lidala. Mina nami ngisafunda. And what I'm learning to do is trust when Idlozi speaks in real time. Mm-hmm. And not only let Idlozi speak in what I consider the sacred spaces, you know. Because Idlozi is always with you. Amadlozi are always with you. And for those who don't know, Amadlozi are not dedicated only to our Bantu who are spiritually gifted. That is just another tier of, I suppose, our human experience that we have here. But all of us have Amadlozi that move with us, that walk with us, that guard us, that protect us, that open the way. So it's not just what we've come to learn from a society and social media perspective, which is a lot, which is very damaging as well for somebody who comes from a very Christian background, who had to go do the work to ngilahleke kancane ngizithole ngiphinde futhi ngilahleke, and it's just the journey, I think. But what was very clear to me was there's two things I want to maybe say to you. And just by the way, I'm not reading you. This is not, I do not read without consent. So I'm not reading you, but it was just what was maybe said that you need to maybe hear is around, Amapupo are not the only thing that you can communicate with your ancestors with. That's the first thing I need to tell people. I don't believe they're also reserved for people who are spiritually gifted in that sense, right? Because it then would mean, what are the rest of the people left with? One of the things that maybe needs to happen for you a little bit more is to embrace the fact that umawi avuka mucula or umusemcudweni. Maybe it's because it was the one way abantu bako could express themselves. And now you are almost like it's the one way that they're going to speak to you, but you keep running away because you're, I need to find the words right. Because and I suppose it's a lesson to me as well, being here standing and speaking. Hold on, I got tissue.
Look what y'all have done.
Oh, good God.
Is there another hand?
Let me just give you some tissue.
So after this, we'll have time just for that one last hand, right?
I'm going to wrap up now. So I think the comment I want to make to Usisi is that maybe you need to step into it more. Does that make sense? So it's, think of it as equivalent to somebody who dreams, and you stop running away from the fact that you see the things that you see, because, I mean, you're not going to change that. But you start journaling and stepping into it, because then you start to interpret what it's saying to you. So maybe that's what you need to do, is step into it more, maybe in your own personal space, to try to understand what's happening. But abantu bakho bakhuluma nawe, and there's a lot of information that's actually given to you during that experience and that moment. And the more that you spend time in it, is the more that you understand what they're saying to you.
Sounds like there's a conversation to be continued between the two of you. Stella and Diban.
Absolutely.
Where was the last hand?
Good morning. Still morning, yeah. Almost Amporda. My name is Moafrika Wagamukhati. I was responding to you. It's like that. We twasa in different ways, each and every one of us. And I think what I'm picking up is that, like many of us, you are scared to fully surrender. I think each and every one of us have, you know, reached a point where the facade of looking nice, it's very nice, eh? But then when it comes to spirituality, we are all scared to go deeper, especially when you don't have the tools to fully understand how you come back, you know? It's like, is this a one-way ticket, or will I have, you know, a way of navigating to come back? It's exactly that. There are different types of uktwasa, but the uktwasaring of sonics, of ingoma, for me, it is one of the most challenging, because of you are in a space, you know, the sound people are playing music for an ambience, and here you are, you are just being driven to a certain point, you know. But like Ugogo is saying, that you have to learn to listen and find a way of surrendering and learning to come back.
Thank you. If there's no final burning question, a comment?
I just want to say we're here, and we sort of, most of us feel the same way. So Mhlambi, you can find yourself if you can come here.
In other words, asikhulu ngoba sithanda nathi sisi. We are also pushed into the singing thing. It goes and
problem solved.
So with that, maybe just to say thank you to the two of you. You've been a gift. Your books are a gift. They will continue to be. And just wondering in one word how you both feel as we end this conversation. Jake Gama. Give us a nice metaphor, then we'll let it be more than one word.
I honestly just want to thank you for the space that you've held and created, not just here. We've had conversations before, so preparing us, I think everything that's been happening here is hinged on that fact of how generous you were with your time and your thoughts in engaging us, so that this actually, I mean, I don't think I've ever had this kind of experience at Open Book where it's just completely transcends what it is that's between these pages. So siyabulela kakhulu, siyabulela. And this is actually not a plug, but I am going to be sharing Lentsomi live at 4. So if you're still around at the Star Theatre, I'm going to be telling the entire story.
Please come. It's amazing.
It's an open invitation. So I think, yeah, it would be beautiful. But thank you so, 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 so much.
Of course. Do you think you can do shorter than that?
I can. I'll try. I just want to say to everyone that before we spoke, we got here, you wanted to speak to me first. Mm. And we ended up having like a 3-hour conversation to prepare for this. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because in the conversation we had, I felt safe that for us to be able to speak what needs to be said. Because I think other than that, that stuff wouldn't have happened. So I want to say that. And the only metaphor, weeping becomes a river, and a river becomes an ocean.
Yes. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening. This event was made possible by the support of the City of Cape Town, the Heinrich Bull Foundation, and the Wheatfield Estate Foundation Trust.